In the 1960s and 70s, in South Korea, a group of young girls toured around the country, appeared with movie stars and dignitaries, and became celebrities themselves. The Tender Apples, as they were called, filled stadiums with people eager to see the group that appeared on TV and radio and in commercials. They partnered with popular singers from the US too, which only increased their success.
What might be the most remarkable thing about the Tender Apples is the fact that many people didn't expect these girls to amount to anything. They were all disadvantaged, with most orphaned or otherwise separated from their families. Yet they were educated, talented, and successful, and many of them have gone on to live extraordinary lives. The woman behind this intervention is Hwanggun Ok, the head of the orphanage where the Tender Apples started, and eventually one of the founders of the Tender Apples Foundation, which helped raise funds to educate underprivileged girls and boys in South Korea, as well as finding some new homes.
This is Saints Volume 4, the podcast. I'm James Perry.
And I'm Lisa Christensen.
And in this episode, we are going to find out more about Sister Wong and the extraordinary lengths she went to help others and better the world around her.
Missionary work through music in South Korea.
She didn't bear her own children, but she was a mother to many. Kids that didn't even know her, she would have been influencing all of her life.
That's Stan Bronson, who was a young American soldier stationed in Korea during the Vietnam War, and who spent a lot of time with Sister Wong and the children she helped in her role of director of the Songjukwon Orphanage.
His efforts and Sister Wong's keen eye for opportunities to serve would change the lives of dozens of girls, and ultimately help expand the church in South Korea. But before she helped those orphaned and disadvantaged children, Sister Wong was a girl who was determined to better the world.
When she was growing up in Pyongyang, in what is now North Korea, Korea was one country occupied by Japan. Sister Wong and her two close friends vowed that they would not marry and they would not rest until their country was freed. The Japanese occupation ended with Japan's defeat during World War II, but soon after, their country became fractured into what is now known as North Korea and South Korea. Stan Bronson remembers her telling him about her younger years.
They decided to keep the pledge of never marrying, but dedicating their lives to helping people who needed it. Sick people. She was a nurse before she came to BYU, and it became a social worker. And the children left by the Korean War. And they all stuck with that.
Together, the three friends formed the Songjuk Foundation to help orphaned and disadvantaged children, especially girls, have a safe place to live and a good education. One ran the foundation, one ran a school, and Sister Wong ran the Songjukwon Orphanage.
One of the girls there was Ginny Roby. Although Ginny had grown up being cared for by her grandmother, the rural Korean village where they lived was far from upper-level schools and other resources. When Ginny was 11, she earned a scholarship to a private junior high school in Seoul, but her grandmother wasn't well enough to travel. So although she had a loving family member, Ginny was sent to the orphanage so that she could have a better education than she would have in that village.
Orphanage life was not as many people fear that it was. We were divided into rooms. We had four girls to a room. When babies turned five, they were sent to the main building. So the main building had something like 15 rooms, and each room had four girls. And each room had variations in age so that there were oldest sisters and youngest sisters and two in between. And so it kind of resembled family life. And the oldest sister was in charge of that room. So we needed to obey her. And it seemed to work really well. The staff never, ever abused us. They were respectful to us. They helped us. Although there were so many of us that we didn't have individual time with them, they did their jobs very faithfully, and we all felt we were taken care of. So at the individual level, we had sisters, and then the larger group of sisters.
Through the combined efforts of Sister Wong and her friends, the girls at the orphanage could attend school, which normally required families to pay tuition after elementary school. This meant the girls could get an education they wouldn't have otherwise been able to afford. In addition to ensuring the girls at the orphanage could attend middle and high school, Sister Wong started a school for young children living near the orphanage. Jeannie remembers how vital education was in Korean culture, and especially to Sister Wong.
Everyone in Korea at that time was very, very eager to educate the children, all the way from the national government down to the poorest of parents. Their wish and want for their children was an education. But I will say that Sister Wong was even more fanatical about education. She herself had been educated, and she saw the power of education, and she wanted each one of us to have that opportunity. And so she constantly, constantly encouraged us and emphasized, you need to study harder. You need to do well. You need to understand that your future depends on this. Because each one of us at age 18 was expected to leave the orphanage and make our way in the world. And she said, education is the way for you to make that way for yourself. So it was very much emphasized and supported.
Getting her own education changed Sister Wong's life in ways she could not have anticipated. She took a sabbatical to earn a master's degree at the University of California, Berkeley, in social work. While there, she encountered two Korean students visiting from Brigham Young University. They encouraged her to transfer schools to go to BYU, which she did. There, Sister Wong fell in love with the mountains, the people, and discovered the gospel. However, she was Presbyterian, and her church was helping fund her sabbatical. When she got back to Seoul, she found the missionaries and began taking lessons from them. And in 1961, she was baptized a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The church was still young in Korea when Sister Wong joined. The first Korean member of the church, Dr. Kim Ho-jik, had only joined 10 years earlier while attending Cornell University in the United States. Through the 50s, a few missionaries began teaching in Korea. When American soldiers came to South Korea to fight in the Korean War, the church members among them further helped spread the gospel. The congregations were not large, but Sister Wong found the restored gospel of Jesus Christ made a big difference to her life, and she enthusiastically volunteered in the church.
It was in part due to Sister Wong's membership in the church that the Tender Apples began. In 1967, Stan Bronson was stationed in Seoul. Before he'd been a soldier, Stan was a singer.
They call your daddy Big Boots, and Big Boots is his name.
And he wanted to use his talents during his off-duty times to help those around him. He asked Spencer and Shirley Palmer, then mission leaders of the Korean mission, how and where he might be able to volunteer. They suggested he contact Sister Wong, who was the Mission Relief Society president. He soon received an invitation to visit her at her orphanage.
It was not late at night, but it was after dark when I got there, and she had heard that I was coming, and I knocked on the first door that I found there as I walked through the gate of the orphanage, and she answered it. She invited me in. She knew who I was or why I was there, although we had never met.
Ginny Roby remembers that night too.
Tall, skinny, wonderful voice, great singing, blue eyes, beautiful smile. Those are the things that I remember.
Stan had planned to come and sing for the girls and maybe teach them some songs, but Sister Wong had the girls sing for him first. He was blown away by their voices.
I am a pretty girl.
Because of his experience as a singer and having previously recorded an album, he was invited to perform on Korean television and radio. He suggested the girls join him on a performance.
It was a hit.
Soon the girls were asked to give more performances on television, radio, and live.
That was the beginning of the singing group that would become known as the Tender Apples. Even as they began to perform, many of the girls didn't think they could succeed. Culturally at that time, children, and especially girls, without strong family connections, weren't thought of highly. Often when they grew up, they were unable to make a living legally and safely. Stan remembers how deeply many of the girls had internalized that message, even living in the supportive environment Sister Huang and the staff at the orphanage had created.
Kids right off the bat, they started saying, we can't make a record, and they really didn't believe it could be done. But I took my album that I'd made out there and showed it to Sister Huang. She showed it to them. I told them, you will be celebrities in your own school before you know it. And they were. All of a sudden, there they were on TV. Even before we had the record come out, we did a couple of gigs there. It made a tremendous difference very quickly. I think people were realizing right off that, hey, there's something going on here. These kids are different. I'm glad I got to be part of it.
For me, it was just heavenly because I love to sing. And to receive some training in singing and to hear our group sound the way that we did and to record it and to hear it again, it was just marvelous to think that we could accomplish something like that. I think we didn't appreciate the scale of the venues that we performed at. We'd never heard of Bob Hope or USO Tours or Anne Margaret or Art Linkletter. So to us, I think it was pretty much another performance and we just wanted to do well. It's only in retrospect that we came to see that these were pretty important high-flung venues.
Most of that popularity came organically, from people seeing performances and wanting to see them again. But some of it came from Sister Huang finding opportunities for the girls. When the girls recorded that album with Stan, which was released in February 1968, Sister Huang arranged a concert attended by a full audience, as well as the U.S. ambassador, the wife of the General of the United Nations Forces, and the top aide to the South Korean president.
She's quite the mover and shaker, and she was a leader. She was well known in her professional circles, but coupled with that, she was very courageous. She was gutsy. She thought, well, there's no harm in inviting these very prominent people, and she says the worst that can happen is they say no. She was very resourceful, very pragmatic. She knew how to use the angles for the good of everyone, especially the vulnerable people.
In 1969, a conversation between Stan and some of the girls revealed that Sister Huang was a member of the church, something Stan hadn't realized had been kept quiet. With the revelation came interest from many of the girls in learning more about the gospel, and that brought a tangle to the situation. One of the main donors to the orphanage was a coalition of Christian churches, and they were wary about the girls being interested in this other religion. Sister Huang talked the matter over with her friends and decided to leave, rather than jeopardize the funding that would help care for so many other children.
By that point, Stan and Sister Huang had started a nonprofit organization in Utah, the Tender Apples Foundation, that got monthly donations to help care for the children at the orphanage. 30 girls from the orphanage eventually left to follow Sister Huang and live in her house. The funds from the Tender Apples Foundation allowed Sister Huang to support them and the other girls who would come later. They continued singing and performing, and Stan kept finding more donors to help Sister Huang's work. The Tender Apples Foundation also facilitated adoptions of some girls to the U.S. Jenny was one of those girls. In the fall of 1967, Stan had rallied members of his hometown of Blanding, Utah, to donate a coat and a doll to a girl at the orphanage. Jenny had taken some English classes at school, so she wrote a thank you note to the family who had sent her gifts. Then, they wrote back. For several months, she and the family wrote letters back and forth. Sister Huang, as a social worker, had one of only a few licenses to do international adoptions in Korea. When the adoption went through, she took Jenny to the airport herself.
I remember that she came to the airport, and I remember her reminding me that I needed to be a good daughter and that I needed to study hard and that she had great expectations for me. She would hold my two hands in her two hands, and she would look at me in the eyes and talk to me. And that was actually the equivalent of a big hug. And so being adopted has been a great blessing. My family already had seven children, so I became the eighth child to arrive in the family. But it was home. This is my eternal family. And it felt very comfortable. My mother tells me that after they brought me home, they could hear singing down the hallway because I was unpacking my suitcase and I was singing because I was happy to be home.
For the girls cared for by the Tender Apples Foundation, the move from the Songjuk Wan orphanage to Sister Wang's home was just the beginning. The singing group continued to grow over the next 5 years, and the Tender Apples gained so much notoriety that girls who weren't impoverished wanted to join the singing group as well. Although Sister Huang was proud of the girls' success and the opportunities it gave them to succeed in life, she also recognized the ability of the group to bring positive attention to the girls and later to the church.
In 1974, Eugene Till became the president of the Korean Mission. He had a background in entertainment and saw an opportunity to use the popularity and talent of the Tender Apples to increase the Korean people's exposure to the church. They traveled around the country, this time not with Stan, but with a group of singing elders called New Horizon. You can read more about their performances in Saints Volume 4, but in less than a year, the effect of these performing groups was already apparent. In 1974, less than 10% of people polled in Seoul had heard of the church, and those who had viewed it unfavorably. But by October 1975, 80% of people had heard about the church, and most viewed it very positively.
For Sister Huang, though, the focus was always on helping others. Between sponsorships and the money the Tender Apples made from performing, she was able to support more girls and some disadvantaged boys at another facilities. She started a preschool to give young kids in need a strong start in their education. Sister Huang passed away in 2008 at the age of 88, but the impact of her life's work is still felt today.
She was just so easy to know before you knew her. I mean, you could take one look at her, and the way she treated you was the way, well, if this Jesus put it, the way you wanted to be treated. She treated me with respect.
My husband knows all about Sister Huang, and he also has embraced her as part of who I am. I think my children understand how special she is to me and the great legacy that she's left. Her life was faith in action, to be sure. Her vision, her courage, her energy, her dedication, it was all because she understood that we're children of God and that we serve each other and that when we make those covenants that we make, we stay true to them. And I think that's applicable anywhere in the world.
Jenny stayed close with Sister Huang after leaving for the U.S., including visiting her in Korea many times and having her visit Jenny in America, too. Jenny herself pursued a career in social work. It is a path inspired by the love and security she felt from both her grandmother and her adoptive family. And in her work, she remembers Sister Huang's example of helping others.
I think that this has driven my professional choices for many decades now. I look to her as a role model in much of what I think and do. I especially think of her personal leadership, her long-term vision for people and changing circumstances. And I gain a lot of comfort and support from that. She's definitely a role model for me, and I do consider her my second mother, if you will. So I'm very proud of my heritage.
From a young girl in Pyongyang determined to change the world, to a devoted caretaker in Seoul, Sister Hwang's legacy lives on around the world. Hers is a story about how one person with steadfast faith and unshakable insistence on helping those around her, and the persistence to overcome the obstacles that appear along the way, really can change the world for the better.
You can read more about Sister Hwang and the Tender Apples and many other everyday people in Volume 4 of Saints. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about this story, and we invite you to email us at saintspodcast@churchofjesuschrist.org. Thank you for listening.